Good morning. You've tuned in to the NPR station, WNJT, Trenton, New Jersey. And next up is a Stream of Random podcast. Thanks for listening. And remember, always vote Democrat. Hey guys, it's me again, and thanks for tuning in to the Stream of Random. Today's show is sponsored by McDonald's, bringing you the mystery meat since 1962. That's right. If you don't really want to know what's in your food, you just want to have instant gratification, come to McDonald's. We got you covered. Boy, these ad reads are really getting on my nerves. Let me tell you what we don't do for money here. It is the 15th of August. We're literally 2 weeks behind in production, in releasing episodes. It means we have a 2 week backlog. You're at the end of a tunnel of editing. Now, I don't have that many shows, or that many recordings for the whole time, because I wasn't recording daily, or walking daily, but now I'm back. I'm back yesterday and today, back on my feet, back in black, back in business. Today I'm going to walk to Washington Crossing, I think, at least to the Scudder Bridge along the canal path. So, I have been working on the map of the world as a puzzle. We have a 1,000-piece puzzle with a map of the world, and I've connected the Bering Straits to Russia, and Russia to Finland, and Finland to Norway, and then all the way down to Portugal, to Africa, all the way to Morocco. It's all one big connected piece. And also I've built America, because I can remember all the pieces. But my knowledge of Southeast Asia is very limited. And South America, I don't know all the pieces. I just worked on Russia yesterday. That was a trip. And what I was doing is I used my phone and I used the Google Assistant to take a picture of a map piece. And then I sent that picture to the Google Assistant to recognize the text. And then I looked up the city that was listed on the piece and then found its relative position in the world so that I could know what part of Russia it was. And it's amazing that Russia has like 4 or 5 map pieces with absolutely no cities on it. It's just empty. Like, it may be a big country, and this might be due to the projection. This might be due to the projection. The places in the north have look bigger than they are, and the places in the equator look smaller than they are. It was funny because when I was editing yesterday, I was using the high-speed playback. When I was editing, and I listened to these car noises at 2x speed, and you could hear the motor going like that. It was really interesting. So, I have an update on one of the topics we talked about, which was fungal networks in graveyards. And according to my research and the links that I put in, American graveyards, modern graveyards, are toxic waste sites with a swimming pool full of formaldehyde, and that the bodies are totally made unedible by the fungus, mostly through all these chemicals. And then the wooden and steel caskets take years to decompose. So that there's not going to be that much biological growth. I asked my wife about this, and she said in Islam, the body's washed, it's wrapped in cloth, and it's put directly into the ground. And the document said that this is about the grave robbers as well, that people were buried with, you know, fancy things, and that grave robbers would come and steal them. So I suppose that's all because people were expected to need those things in the afterlife or some kind of status symbol. It seems to be a little weird, but in England they would bury the king in his boat with his sword and all that stuff as well. That's the famous movie we watched. The guy got buried in his makeshift. His wall collapsed and he got buried under the ground. Coffee's good, guys. So, this is all very interesting. What else do we got? Well, I've been reflecting over what we're doing here, this process. And we're going from a process of straight intuition to tape, no editing, to a backlog, a pipeline of shows. And it's kind of interesting how this is all playing out. But it also shows me the algorithm or the process for producing the show. It is more refined now. And my awareness of myself and my thinking about myself has been updated from these 400 episodes have affected me. They've made a deep impact. I've gone from blindly just babbling to actually thinking. And it's a process of becoming more aware. We say we're going to build a neural network. Now we're also monitoring it, tuning it, observing it, becoming it, managing it. So, what else? My tooth is getting better. The pain is going back. The debilitating pain is recovering. And I guess the bones are healing. Phosphorus is needed. I've been taking vitamins and supplements. My wife has a plant-derived supplement, NT41. I never really talk about it on this show, but it contains phosphorus, less than 1% of the RDA, so it's not listed as such. I mean, it's on the bottle, but it's not. We can't make claims about that, but it's very interesting because that phosphorus comes from the plants, and that comes from the fungus, and these plants are from old growth forests and nature in Europe and contain a lot of minerals from the fungus, from the ground, from the earth. And that really makes me think about our diets today, that if you over fertilize the plants, then it doesn't create the symbiotic network, and it's not extracting those nutrients from the ground because the plant is just being stupid. And that kind of gets into the whole topic of our show today, and our sponsor, McDonald's, delivering us fake food since 1960. I mean, how much of the food from McDonald's is really created using the symbiosis? And how much of it is synthetic? And are we growing our tentacles, our root systems properly, and metaphorically speaking? Or are we just being spoon-fed goo from the vat? Are we connected to nature? Are we grounded? You know, people say, oh, you have to be grounded. Well, what is the ground? What does it mean to be grounded? The ground is the decomposing matter of life before us. It's our ancestors, prepared by the fungus. It's fungal matter. So if you're grounded, that means you're connected to the fungus. If you're composting, it means you're feeding the fungus. Now, I see this tall grass. We talked about tall grass yesterday's show. And I was listening to Free Talk Live on the Friday the 13th episode. And they're talking about the pre-crime unit in Florida uses algorithms to determine who is most likely to be a criminal. And then they go after those people preemptively. And they were harassing them about junk on their car, on their yard, or tall grass, or uncut grass. So that's the association I made there. Now, if you grow tall grass, does that count as uncut grass? When does it become landscaping? And who's to say that this type of grass that you want to grow is tall grass and the other type of grass is just normal grass? It seems to me to be prejudice and racist against the grass. You know, it's discriminating against one type of grass, saying, well, this type of tall grass is allowed to grow above, you know, 4 feet. Because it's racially superior. Its species, or species genetically superior, this species here is allowed to violate the law. And this law only applies to this other type of grass. It seems to be discriminatory. I know this sounds crazy, but it's just an example. Dun-dun. Right. Boy, you hear that sound? That rumbling? That's one of those trains in the background. It feels so good to go for this walk. The sun is not out yet. It's a little bit of breeze. The air is cool. I feel alive. Nothing's hurting. It's amazing. It's amazing the situation we're going through. Yesterday, when I was just editing the piece where I talked about being afraid of the government's response to COVID. And I'm going to leave that in there because it's a genuine fear that I felt. I'm speaking from my heart. I think I was very reasonable about the whole thing. And we also have to look at things from the lens of how long it takes to gain knowledge about these things and how they could possibly have this all ready so quickly and approved so quickly. And, you know, no one's talking about Operation Warp Speed and how Trump was pushing on this thing so much. I mean, there's so much to analyze, and books will have to be written. We're not going to know for a long time, if ever, what's really going on. But humans sacrifice truth for power all the time. That's why our elections are not perfect, because we care about not the truth of the situation, but who's effectively in control of it. So what else do we got? So yesterday I talked about collecting of usage information as a sessions creating strings, and that these sessions, in order for them to be public, I'm thinking that the sessions will unique, or that we won't be able to directly associate. So on the public blockchain, we don't want to be able to directly associate a person with personally identifiable information, so that even a usage block, if I listen to a show, the statistics about that, The question is, how much of that is personally identifiable? Let's say I only listen to the first 10 minutes of a certain show. Always. That would really... that could be used to identify me. Or at least to give people a starting point to identify me. So that I don't want that information... do I want that information to be public? So here's Mama Deer and two babies inside of someone's fence, just on their yard. Cutest things you've ever seen. And the one sees me. Mama's just like, ignore them. Ignore that guy. Just keep on moving. So I think the first step is we're going to say that any information we put onto this, we're going to have to create some kind of second layer of privacy. There's got to be some information that is only shared if you sell it. Let's say each packet of statistics has a public and a private chain. And the public would be an aggregate information. If we think about this like the plants and the fungus, where the users are like the plants, and they're bartering with the fungus for minerals. And the data collectors want to get the most detailed information, like what parts of the show are being listened to, right? Who is this person? Like Spotify level. So we're going to consider Spotify type tracking system of who, what the demographics are of a person. Like, how do they know all this stuff? What does Google know about you? So this is a very tricky situation that we need to look into deeper. But my basic idea is that there will be an encrypted level of the blockchain. And each packet will contain a public information, like I'm sending this much money to this producer or this podcaster. I just saw a deer scratching its head, a little baby Bambi scratching its head with its hind foot. That has got to be the cutest. These are the cutest little Bambis you've ever seen. So I'm struggling with this idea of what information is shared with whom about what. So let's just break this whole thing down. First of all, what do you want to share? Let's say you want to publicly praise someone and say, this was a great episode. Or this part of the episode was amazing. I liked it. And let's say you're willing to share that information with the public as well. All right. So that's a choice on your side. Now, let's just say Podcasting 2.0, they're saying, well, we're going to send a stream of sats to the shows we listen to. If we choose to, with a boost button and a chat button and boostograms and all that. Now, I always said that that is going to basically expose people's personal information, listening habits, and that in the end you should aggregate it so that they won't have the minute-by-minute information. So So let's say they want the minute-by-minute information to feed the algorithms, but users don't necessarily want to give it. So this gets into the question of, who do you trust? And can you sell that information to somebody by allowing them to decode it? And how would you do that? And how would that exchange be mediated? Like, is it stored on the blockchain but encrypted? Well, let's say there's a separate blockchain for private information. Or it's merged together. So I don't have a solution for this yet. And I'm just thinking about it. And maybe the answer is that this private information would be streamed privately to a private off-chain provider. That's the one solution. But the other solution is that it's encrypted somehow, in a way that there's a public and private part to it, and the public part is of general interest, and the private part can then be sold to someone who's the highest bidder, who will bid for your private information. And that could create an interesting economy of people who are willing to host useless information for them, so that they would earn coins for hosting this private information, and the buyer would have to pay the network, to help support it. So we need to think about that. And this is going to get into, like, these storage chains. I guess it gets into the whole data storage chain. Like, you need 3 copies of it, encrypted, and so forth, right? So we need to think about the architecture of this whole thing. But I think if enough people would be willing to sell this data, that it could create an entire market where you're in control. And, well, this gets into the whole trust thing. Like, how do you know that a person is really who they say they are? And so forth. Like, if you're going to pay someone to do something, how come they don't just fake their identity? Now, Brave has that opt-in, you earn coins or bats for selling your tracking information. Well, and we talked about, like, the price of anonymous versus the price for qualified. We did talk about that. Looks like I'm going to have to do a lot of research into this while I'm editing. So I was listening to the New Books Network on Mathematical Problems of Merlin. That was interesting. This kid who loves to talk, they got him on the podcast, and he's just talking and talking and talking, spinning up some fantasies about Merlin. And they were trying to, like, make the unsolved mathematical problems of the world interesting. I feel free from this Pokemon Go, though, let me tell you. 48 minutes going in the wrong direction, and now I'm supposed to go back in the other direction. An hour one way, an hour the other way. Or do I just continue with my folly and keep on going in this direction? Does it matter where I go? I've used 4% of my battery. We do switch topics a lot. Wow, there's a million flies in the water here. Or swimmers, something swimming on top of the river. I wonder where all the fish are to eat them. Oh well, I'm going to take the long route on the canal, which is kind of a boring walk, and it's normally full of annoying people. Not even 7 o'clock, it's 6:51, so maybe I won't see so many people. But it's going to get hot. So what the hell are we talking about? Well, what if the user could send the usage statistics directly to the recipient? And say, hey, I really liked your show. Here are my usage statistics of your show. I'm gifting them to you because they're of value to you. And then the podcaster or the people who are hosting might get this information sent to them on the blockchain, I guess, encrypted. And then they could aggregate that information or sell it or do what they want with it. But would be a value to give to them. So that's like the form of the payment. The payment is either money or usage statistics. How about that? And instead of having it going to the Spotify, it would go directly to the producers of the show, and then they could aggregate and sell it as they wish. And all of it would be signed and vouched so that me sending it to them, depending on my trust level, would be more valuable for them, because they could then barter and say, I've got 10,000 trusted users with their statistics, and then they could share that with advertisers if they wanted to, and barter for money, and be in a position of power to choose what to disclose. In the end, user tracking information is currently consumed by Google and these big companies. I think this method of treating it as something, a valuable resource that could be sold, is key here. Yesterday we were also talking about the optimization, machine optimization, what size of bytes do you use, or words. What's the word size of a machine, and when do we waste space to save time, time-space trade-off. You optimize it for code size or execution time. All right. I think I've emptied out my mind for now, what I wanted to say. I'm going to go offline, save some battery, and talk to you guys when I have something else to say. It's been an hour anyway. Welcome to segment two. It's 7:35. I had a brief period of reflection and thought. Oh my god, this thing's buzzing at me. Let's see what's buzzing at me. My boss, the internet, is telling me what to do. So here's some observations. First of all, trees are hanging into the water, and the bottom part of the tree is muddy, which means that the water was higher. Next step is that I was walking on the gravel, which produced those loud stepping sounds. And now I'm walking on the grass, which offers more resistance. Jamie, come on, calculate the resistance coefficient between grass and gravel for walking. I was passed by this lady with a little water backpack who was running quite quickly, like three times my speed. Also, you know, my crazy plan to collect 9 tons of rocks. I collected one rock. Oh, here's a fungus. Let me take a picture of that. I collected one rock, and it was freaking heavy. I realize my folly in wanting to collect 20,000 of those. Just the sheer audacity. But on the other side, the bamboo, I realize I could carry on my head or I could pull behind me on a cart if I package it up just right. I'm thinking about how that would possibly be done without a car. Here's a tree that fell on the canal. So I'm thinking also about, well, there's a bouncy ball in there. It's pretty rank. It smells pretty bad. All types of garbage. Oh, there's a dead animal that's literally covered in flies. It's covered in maggots. It's floating in the water. You've never seen something so disgusting or smelled something so disgusting. Looks like the water provides an ideal decomposition. So I'm starting to think about mathematics and languages and proofs as representation, where basically the idea is that you build a mathematical model of something in terms of a language and a machine that will accept or reject that language. I mean, this is the essence, and they get more and more complicated. These machines get more and more complicated over time, and the languages do as well. So I'm thinking of the OpenGL 3GS work. So we have a three-dimensional object, point cloud, or points, that's controlled by a function with lots of different parameters. So that's a language unto itself, like all the different possibilities. And then we can describe that and select between these different parameters and manipulate them. So creating the number of points would be, if you want to create a square or a cube, etc., be different loops. And those loops would be driven by parameters from the user. And those are actually created. Those are actually created as part of the program. So programs can also define their own parameters, not only third-party libraries. So flow control loops or multiplications or repeated operations are all controlled by parameters. Picture of a lily pond or yellow flower. Well, for one, this is a chimney. Looks like there's an old shack here. Stovepipe. So that's why the trail goes away from the... There was a homestead here at one point on the canal that has been removed. I bet you there's a story behind that. But that's the one section of the canal the trail separates from the waterway. You can see why now. So let's continue. So we're able to define variables that control loops. Or loops are... and have constants or variables. I mean, this is where we get into, let's say, code.org. We've got more fungus growing here on tree roots. So a generic language is able to take constants or parameters. It really doesn't matter. Either it fetches from a variable or it directly has a value loaded. It's a similar operation. One is just a little bit more steps. One is load this value into the register. The other is dereference this value and load it into the register. So the reason why I'm photographing the fungus instead of collecting is, first of all, I have no idea what all these are. These little white ones I've seen the second time growing in grass. I gotta join a fungus club, a mushroom meetup. So what else we got? So I'm struggling with the difference between the code in JavaScript and the code in some language built on top of JavaScript. I guess some kind of virtual machine, or just some parameters that are passed in and interpreted. A lower powered language that would only allow you to do certain things, ideally powered by numbers. Or pictures, even. Like, take a bitmap and upload it. Compile your code to a bitmap. And that's your code. So this kind of gets into the question of language representation, where the bitmap would be a Turing machine, but you still need a compiler to make it human usable. And to go from a Turing machine to a higher level language is not an easy operation. Reverse engineering. Generally not easy. Now this is the moment of truth to see if these steps are finished or not. So I can cross the bridge here. There's no way that I'm going to climb up there or do anything crazy. It's all good that I can edit this stuff out. But I see now that the reverse engineering going from the Turing machine to a high-level language is going to be a very complicated operation, and not a deterministic one or a decidable. How far they got with this walkway, it almost looks like it's finished. Nice thing about wearing a safety vest is, if you're working on a construction site, people tend to leave you alone. And this walkway looks like it is really ready for walking on. Let me take a picture of this. I'm going to be the first person to walk across the bridge. Well, I guess if I die falling off this thing, it would be very sad. Especially since it's not officially finished. But it looks good enough to me. I mean, if we can support concrete, let's just take a look at it first. This looks good enough. All right. I'm on the concrete walkway. This is nice. It's not completely finished. And this is cool, huh?
Yeah, excellent.
Finally.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we're supposed to be crossing, but...
No. Well, I got a safety vest on, so I can say it. You know.
All of that.
Hey, doggy.
How you doing?
Hey, puppy. Whoa!
Calm yourself. She doesn't know how to be pet.
Uh-oh.
Calm yourself.
She doesn't know how to be pet.
It's fine. Cool. Have a nice day.
I would say, have you crossed before?
No, it's my first time.
Okay.
Well, you go first.
Yeah, no, I've been over the last 2 weeks. This
great.
Third time.
Awesome. This is awesome. They have these weird little boxes. I guess they have lights. These are lights. I guess they're going to have a computer panel of some kind. Or lights. These are lights. But this is going to change everything, this bridge. It really is. Which means I can cross on foot at Scudder. I can go up to Yardley and have a coffee, which I couldn't do before. Or even if I did, I'd have to go all the way up to Washington Crossing, which would be another hour, 2 hours lost. So this is an awesome loop. It's going to change this whole podcast. I'm going to have to edit out some of it. Toll by plate, $3. Easy pass, $1.25. So I'm saving $1.25 by walking. And you only pay one way from New Jersey to Pennsylvania. You don't pay from Pennsylvania to New Jersey. Okay, I'm back. Not so noisy here now. I got some coffee. And I had one of the best breakfast sandwiches that I've had in a long time. It tasted like they actually made it fresh. I'm heading back to the bridge in Trenton, so I'll complete my first loop of the new bridge, opening up a new era in my walking. And next time I'll go through Trenton earlier, as to avoid having to come back through the bad part of town at 9 a.m. The Pennsylvania side of the canal was pretty much dried up in Yardley. Now here further south, it has some water in it, but it's got a lot of algae blooms going. The water is really green. I was talking to someone who's a vegetarian, and I'm wondering how many vegetarians have dogs? And have you heard about vegetarian cats? People who feed their cat a vegetarian diet. But really, if you are a vegetarian, how can you own a dog that eats meat? And then I was explaining to them that they should stop eating fungus, because fungus is very intelligent. And like, does it have a neural system? It's like, it has a mycelium network. But that would also include plants. So it's really a question of, how do you define intelligence? And how we should only buy wood from sustainably sourced wood. I mean, where does it start? Where does it stop? And how do we slow down the ravishing of the planet I mean, this is really the question. And if we do stop, we're slow down. Look at these huge turtles in the water. I got some pretty good pictures of turtles. If we do slow down the ravaging of the planet, that just means that we're going to increase the prices eventually so much that people are going to fight each other to death or starve or die or suffer. I mean, that's... or choose not to have kids. Or they have to come up with some... Now that is a big fish. Let's see if I can get a picture of him. Okay, I completely lost my topic. Luckily, we're going to have an editor. There's a huge turtle here. Oh my god. It's a monster alligator snapper. It looks like a dinosaur. It's got a huge long tail, a big nasty looking head with spikes all over it. Alligator snappers. Now he's come up for air. They've got pretty good vision too. Okay, now I remember what I was talking about the vegetarians. And this is all this discussion about carbon credits and how to control the population, how to make things more equitable. And I think it's really it's not an easy question to even talk about. And it's not really something I want to get into on this show. I mean, I already got into it. But the logical conclusion of saying we're going to save the planet seems to be that we're going to reduce the human consumption or come up with new technologies that are more efficient, that allow you to feed more people. And that kind of gets into the main sponsor, the serving people of slime. And, you know, what's the sustainable practices for, what are the sustainable practices for creating food and feeding people? It's such an essential problem. Okay. So I'm listening to Podcasting 2.0, episode 50, and I'm thinking about my whole server idea was based upon this rack server. But now I'm thinking a Raspberry Pi is probably the best way to start as a controller. And then I'm thinking we need a basic operating system. I'm thinking something like Kubernetes. A basic operating system where I can start by attaching disks to it, and it'll start indexing those disks. I can hook up all my old computers to this network one by one, or even just attach drives to it, and it'll start scanning these drives and copying the data and backing it up. Kind of like a cryptojacking, but a benign cryptojacker. And it'll start copying the stuff into the cloud, encrypted. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about now. Considering how I used to run servers off of like 586s or 686s on the internet, Pentium 3, I had a Pentium 3 server rack mounted in the internet in a data center, and it was flying fast. I mean, we used to have internet servers that were old machines doing simple things. Think about Telnet and all that. I mean, also think about the usage of power. So I guess we need to have this smart power switch that can turn these machines off if they're not needed. Put them in sleep mode, wake on LAN, hibernate them. So many people here. So discovery and exploitation of resources, as we said. I guess once I get all these hard drives off and these machines, I could also get rid of some of these old machines. Or donate them, wipe the hard drives somehow, or just remove them. run them off of SD cards, external USBs. All right. Okay, so I found a nice quiet spot here. I got a blister on my foot, and my fat legs are rubbing against each other. I'm sure I'm gonna get some kind of spot from that. Some rubbed off skin from the humidity. They say it was one of the hottest days of the year yesterday. I guess we're gonna go swimming today. The water was so dirty and so full of people. Oh my God. It was like a soup at the public swimming pool. I guess I'm gonna make some phone calls now. Look, I think this is enough, guys. 2 hours, it's gonna be a pitch to edit, so I'm going to say goodbye. See you next time. So, I'm back again. And I got some ideas that I just can't get rid of, so I'm gonna write them down on this virtual notepad. So first of all, Turing machine accepts a language as its input to run. And that is just a tape, a sequence of bits, an encoding, a number, a good old number basically, and a human language gets translated by a compiler into machine language, which are different layers of computing, different layers of language. So the first thing is that the translation mechanism is again a program. Reverse engineering would be like reversing that program. And it's not always reversible. Like if it's a profile-driven compilation, or just-in-time, or dynamic, I mean, there's all types of factors that could affect the code that's generated. Just like the guys who are working on this prime number system for 20 years. So the translation between two languages, or reverse translation, let's say from a simpler or higher level language with less expressibility, or that has the same expressibility, since the Turing machine can represent every algorithm, it might be that the Turing machine has more expressiveness than a given computing language. Even if the given computing language is Turing complete, it can express everything. So that's the one research topic to look into. So this whole interstate travel vaccination ban, are they going to put something on the bridges and say, you know, you can't cross the bridge without showing your papers? Wow, there was some kind of ambulance at the bridge there. So I had this idea about Bitcoin payments and recipes. And if you think about, you know, creating kombucha, all the inputs that you need to feed it, to feed the fungus, and the outputs that it produces. So, what's going on out there? You look at all the... What's this guy screaming about? The moment when you assess your options of running away, some weirdo in the park. So basically what I want to say is that there's a whole series of movements or actions that take place to produce a product, and each of those are associated with a cost or a value or a action or a movement or an economic thing, a value, a action, a language string feeding a Turing machine. The machine accepts some string. It does some action based upon some rules. So if we look at all of the inputs creating kombucha and where those inputs come from, how they're sourced, and the growing of plants, growing of tea, and the shipping, harvesting, drying, shipping, processing, each of those could be considered a payment or some kind of smart contract. They're all interlinked, decentralized network. Okay, here we go. So I got away from the crazy person and just some random crazy guy, I guess, yelling at himself, exclaiming out loud. Extroverted intuition, I think is what Mr. Chicken said. Not external intuition, but extroverted intuition. These crows, what are they doing? Yeah, I need to get some clips to talk about, to fill in for my show that I'm editing, where I was talking about how the lawn mowing, the mowing of grass. So I was saying how the smell of this lawnmower reminded me of the smell of my tooth getting drilled. This organic material getting ripped up had the same reminiscent smell of the lawnmower. It's pretty crazy. So the flow of transactions, the flow of money, is the flow of actions, is the flow of resources, time and energy, people doing things, plants doing things, people growing things, the fungus eating things, all producing kombucha. It's a very long supply chain, which is one of the things that I don't like. It's like, we don't grow tea here. We don't produce sugar here. So it's really a first world luxury item, which makes me think I should bring it to Princeton, to some fancy shops. And I guess I will do that eventually. But I want to see if I can get my foothold in some local shops, to be honest. You know how they deliver kegs? I have to look at this whole beverage industry and how they deliver kegs of drinks to people, kegs of beer, and they have contracts with them, and they can only serve Coke or Pepsi. I gotta look at those contracts for my kombucha. It looks like it's already been done. I'm just thinking of what other people are doing. Well, this is really turning into my own personal notebook. Well, what the hell? It's all my personal life. Wow, I'm still walking. 27,000 steps. So there's a whole flow of economics. If we ignore the money and just look at movements, people are growing plants, harvesting them, shipping them off, drying them, shipping them off, and then they're landing in the kombucha to grow a fungus. Like, that's the result. The result is the fungus is growing, the kombucha is growing and spreading. Everything else, the money, they're just symbols and things that are used to motivate the proper exchange, the decision-making process of what to do. Depending on scarcity of resources. And how does that happen? The scarcity of resources. How did the plants decide which plant gets the phosphorus? You know? Which plant gets the sugar sent to it, or the resources sent to it through the network? How do they decide which one survives and which one dies? How does that happen on the plant level? And that's the topic of today, really, is global depopulation or the limiting of human growth. And what a horrible concept that is. We are almost home, let me tell you. This has been a long walk, 20,000 steps, 30,000 steps. It's been a long one. Luckily, it's not so hot today. So I'll see you guys next time.
The fungus, 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 the fung